Our guest the first 2 hours today is Mike Norton. He is also known as New Name Noah. You can find his videos at New Name Noah YouTube. And anyway, we were talking about Fanny Alger just before the break, and he supposedly married her before the sealing power, which occurred in 1836. Now, Oliver Cowdery called it just a filthy, dirty affair. So, yeah. And he was also fooling around with some of his wife's cousins in Pennsylvania before, well, just immediately after they were married. So, he was just a philanderer, in my opinion.
You know, what's fascinating is that Joseph Smith, in his lifetime, never actually had himself sealed to any of his own immediate family, his parents and his brothers, and he didn't do any of that. But yet he was supposedly sealing himself to all these women. I find it ironic talking about polygamy that a church that is known for their early practice of polygamy and Mormonism still believes that polygamy will exist in the next life. In fact, one of their most outspoken leaders today, Dallin H. Oaks, is actually sealed to two separate wives. This is one of their most outspoken leaders who is thoroughly opposed to same-sex marriage and has spoken against it many, many times. The church is a friend of the court in that lawsuit from the bakery that's trying to prohibit, make it legal to discriminate against people based entirely on their sexual orientation. And the Mormon church is a friend of the court on that. They were one of the largest supporters of the Proposition 8 campaign in California years ago that very briefly made it illegal for a same-sex marriage. And yet Dallin H. Oaks, the H stands for homophobe, by the way, he's married to two separate women. He's married to June Dixon. She died in 1998. And then 2 years later, he married and was sealed for eternity to a woman named Kristen McCain. So Dallin H. Oaks, one of the Mormon leaders alive and today, is essentially a polygamist in the next life.
And there are even other people who've done the same thing, other leaders. The other thing that people... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, I just appreciate the irony that this church that is so opposed to same-sex marriage and they call it a counterfeit marriage and all that, you just have to appreciate the irony that a church that is known for its polygamy and still believes in polygamy in the next life is so opposed to anything, and would have the audacity to even have the words traditional marriage come out of their mouths. You know, they say that marriage is between a man and a woman, when in reality they believe marriage is between a man and a woman, and a woman, and another woman. It's just hypocrisy at its best.
Right. Well, the scriptures, the Doctrine and Covenants, states that they would be married, that a man could only be married to one wife, and that's doctrine. And yet, after the fact, they started practicing polygamy. The other thing, the other excuse, justification for polygamy, they say, it's claimed, that there were more women than there were men. And so they were just doing the noble thing of marrying these women. Otherwise, these women would not have had a husband. And that's just not true. In fact, also regarding the subject, they were importing people from young women from England to come over here and just for the purpose of marriage in polygamous relationship. When you look at the history, which a lot of members will not look at the history, they don't read the Journal of Discourses, they don't look at the history of the church, and it's unfortunate.
Yeah, I agree.
Wow. Do you want to talk about the CES letter? or the Kinderhook plates.
Right. Oh, the Kinderhook plates. That's a good one. Okay, so let's go to the Kinderhook plates. In 1842, the Mormons are living in a town called Nauvoo in Illinois. They basically took a bunch of swamp land, bought it up, and they turned it into, at the time, was the second largest city in the state of Illinois, second only to Chicago. They had tens of thousands of people living there, and it was a booming metropolis. Well, there was a town about 90 miles north called Kinderhook, Illinois, and a couple of guys decided to pull one over on the Mormon prophet Joseph Smith. So they make these bogus little plates that were kind of bell-shaped, about 6 inches tall, and put some chicken scratches on it and buried them in a hill, and then at nighttime and then during the day they're digging these plates up. And the story was the main guy said that he had a dream 3 nights in a row that there was some ancient records buried in this hill. So he kind of played in the Joseph Smith little thing because that was the thing that Joseph Smith would say. And he finds these plates, and of course, immediately everybody's all excited, but they don't know what the plates say. There's strange writing on them. Well, you know who could translate that, of course. The prophet Joseph Smith. So these Kinderhook plates, as they have become known, find themselves down to Nauvoo, Illinois, and Joseph Smith takes a look at them, and he says, and this is almost a word-for-word quote, "I see they contain a record of the man with whom they were buried. He was a descendant of Ham, through the loins of the Pharaoh, and he received his kingdom from the ruler of heaven and earth." And, of course, everybody's, yay! He can translate it. Yeah, a copy of these plates, front and back, were on the front page of the Times and Seasons, which was the local newspaper, the Mormon-owned newspaper in Nauvoo. In Warsaw, Illinois, they had, I think it was called the Warsaw Signal. They wrote an article about the Kinderhook plates and described them as nothing short of a sequel to the Book of Mormon. But Joseph Smith was killed a couple of years later and never really got around to finishing the translation of these Kinderhook plates. But just the fact that he would even make a partial translation, an off-the-cuff, this is what they say type of translation, is absolutely ridiculous. For about 120 years, the church maintained their position that if only we had these Kinderhook plates, we would be able to prove once and for all that Joseph Smith is a prophet of God. But unfortunately, they were lost for forever. Well, not so much. One of those Kinderhook plates resurfaced in a museum in the 1960s, and carbon dating testing was done on them, and linguistic testing was done, and it was concluded, and the church agreed wholeheartedly that the plates are bogus. They were manufactured in the New England area in the mid to early 1830s, and the writing on them was essentially chicken scratches just made to fool Joseph Smith, and it worked. It's just one in a line of bogus translations and failed translation attempts by Joseph Smith, who, I mean, the guy was a professional con artist. And by his own admission, he was essentially a professional con artist. When he was a child, he was a professional glass looker, which essentially meant that he would go door to door, and he would tell people that he has a gift, and he could tell them where they have buried treasure on their own property, and all they have to do is just give him like 25 cents. You give me 2 bits. And I'll tell you where the treasure is buried on your property. So they'd pay the 25 cents, and they'd start digging. And when Joseph Smith pointed out the spot, you know, he'd put his rock in his hat, and he'd put his face in the hat and look at it. And he would tell them, yep, it's right over by that tree, 10 feet to the left. And they'd start digging. And as soon as they hit anything, a rock, a piece of wood, anything, Joseph would look at his little peep stone again, and he would say, oh, no, spirits are moving. They're moving the treasure. You better hurry. Oh, they've moved it. I'll tell you what, though. If you give me 25 cents, I'll tell you where they moved it to. And you know, this is the 1820s, 1830s. These people would buy it hook, line, and sinker, and they'd give him another quarter, and then he'd tell them where they moved the treasure to. And eventually, after they gave, you know, 75 cents or a buck to him, they'd finally get angry and kick him off their property, and he'd move on to the next sucker. And by his own admission, he made about $14 a month doing that for a living.
And his father was also engaged in that business.
Yes, yes. It ran in the family. Joseph Smith was a professional con artist, but he learned at the at the feet of his father. His father also was a professional con artist. His father belonged to what they called the Fraternity of Rodsmen, where he believed that he had the ability to use a divining rod. And I know that I've actually heard of people that firmly, adamantly claim and believe that they have the ability to find water with divining rods or dowsing rods. I don't believe in it, and I don't believe anybody has ever successfully and blind studies been able to prove that they have any ability to find anything with a divining rod. It's like a Y-shaped stick, typically, that they would hold with both hands. And I believe it was Oliver Cowdery's father. Well, actually, Oliver Cowdery had the gift of working with the rod, which that's how it was stated in the original 1833 Book of Commandments. But just a couple years later, they changed the wording and said that Oliver Cowdery had the gift of Aaron, and Aaron being the brother of Moses, who had his, remember his staff that he,
right,
that he would turn into a snake and all that. So Oliver Cowdery claimed to have the gift of working with a divining rod, and Joseph Smith, of course, to soothe Oliver's ego and to keep him true to the faith, actually had a revelation from God telling him that Oliver had the gift of Aaron, or the gift of working with the rod. And Oliver would ask God yes or no questions, and his little divining rod would bob up and down, giving him the yes or no answer to his straightforward questions from God. It's like a walkie-talkie that only has Morse code, essentially, and the person on the other end is God. Pretty cool if you think about it, but of course it was complete horse, you know.
Sure. It's very interesting. You've talked about the Book of Mormon. There have been thousands of changes in the Book of Mormon since its first publication. And a lot of the apologists will say, oh, those are just typographical errors. We just divided it down into paragraphs to make it easier to read. But these were actually doctrinal changes. Now, if in fact God actually delivered this translation to Joseph Smith, who used a seer stone in his hat, did not look at the golden plates, the so-called golden plates that nobody ever saw, then there shouldn't have had to have been any corrections at all. It should have been perfect right at the beginning, correct?
Yeah. The Book of Mormon, I'll tell you, although there's been about 4,000 changes made to the Book of Mormon, even as a former Mormon, I can freely admit that a vast majority of the changes made to the Book of Mormon were grammatical changes. There was a few other changes that weren't really grammatical, but and Joseph Smith says that it was the most correct of any book on earth. As a Mormon, I rationalized the changes made to the Book of Mormon because, I felt like, hey, this is he was translating it from Reformed Egyptian, which is a language that doesn't exist, into English. And, there's bound to be some mistakes, even though God is helping him translate. There's bound to be some mistakes, right?
Mm-hmm. Well,
then how do we explain the thousands and thousands of changes made to the Doctrine and Covenants? Because that wasn't being translated from one language into the next. It was literally the words of God as they came out of Joseph Smith's mouth, and his scribe oftentimes a man by the name of William Clayton, was studiously writing down what Joseph Smith was saying. But yet, if you were to compare the original Doctrine and Covenants, which is known as the Book of Commandments, 1833, and you can get a photographic reproduction of an 1833 Book of Commandments for just literally for a few dollars from the Utah Lighthouse Ministry in Salt Lake. You can order them online. And you compare the 1833 version to the version we have today, the changes, I mean, there's tens of thousands of changes. In some cases, the changes completely reverse the original intent and meaning of a prophecy or revelation that Joseph Smith gave. In fact, you don't even have to compare it to today's. You could compare the 1833 version to the 1835 version, and you would find thousands of changes made just in 2 years. In fact, that led one of the witnesses to the Book of Mormon, David Whitmer, to basically, he was angry. He left the church and didn't just leave the church quietly. He was convinced Joseph Smith was a fallen prophet, and he wrote a little pamphlet called An Address to All Believers in the Book of Mormon, which you can also buy from the Utah Lighthouse Ministry, essentially written to members of the church, telling them that, you know, is there anyone that believes, that professes any belief in God, that would believe that this is how God works, that he would give a revelation and then completely reverse the wording and meaning of that original revelation? Is this how God works? Well, yes, that's how the God of Mormonism works. He changes his mind an awful lot. One big change made in Mormonism somewhat recently in my lifetime was changes made to the temple endowment ceremony.
Oh, yes. Let's talk about that.
So when I first went to the temple in 1987, I was 19 years old, and one of the things that we did was we would all raise our hands into the air, and as we lowered them and then raised them back up again and lowered them slowly, we would chant, Pele Ale, Pele Ale, Pele Ale. We were told that is the language. It's the pure Adamic language. It's the language that Adam and Eve spoke in the Garden of Eden. And this was revealed, of course, to the prophet Joseph Smith. And it means, oh God, hear the words of my mouth. And during the ceremony, we would also have to, we had what we called penalties, where we would swear an oath that we would never reveal what we were doing in the temple. And rather than do so, we would say, actually, this is interesting. We wouldn't say it. We would have to think it. That we were instructed to think in our minds, rather than do so, I would suffer my life to be taken. And we would think this in our heads, as we were drawing our thumbs across our throats, as if we were slitting our own throats. We would also say, think it again, as we are drawing our thumbs across our stomachs, pretending to slash our stomachs open, and again, when we were pretending to rip our hearts out of our chest. So 1988, the church put out a survey to about 4,400 members who had been through the temple, and asked them essentially essay questions. What did you like about your first experience in the temple?
Nothing. Nothing.
What didn't you like?
And everything.
People would answer these questions. And what's interesting is, 2 years later, in 1990, they made massive changes to the temple endowment ceremony. So now, instead of chanting Pele Ale, you would chant, oh God, hear the words of my mouth. And you can watch this on my YouTube channel.
Wow. All righty, we'll be back in 3 minutes.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it. At AROutfitting.com.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest is Mike Norton for the first 2 hours. We were talking about the the Temple Endowment, and so it was changed. They passed out the survey, and then they had a revelation to change it, right? I was dumbfounded when I went to the temple the first time. I thought I was in another world. It didn't seem to have anything whatsoever to do with anything that I had learned at church. It was a terrible experience, horrible. I can't describe how I felt. And you're not supposed to talk about it outside of the temple. And everyone else seemed so happy for my former husband and myself. I thought, well, it must be me. It must be that I'm just not understanding what has transpired. But it was just the weirdest thing I'd ever experienced.
You know, it's funny how the temple endowment ceremony, even now, even though they've removed the penalties and you're not chanting, in some foreign language anymore, and you're not being touched all over your nearly naked body in the initiatory, the washing and anointing ceremony, it's still super creepy. But it used to be much worse. I mean, you know, you take the creepiness of it now, you multiply it times 10, and that's what you were dealing with before April of 1990 when they made the changes. But even now, without the weird chanting in a foreign language, they still chant. Just now they say, "Oh God, hear the words of my mouth." It's still super creepy. And it's kind of like a case of the emperor has no clothes, where all the Mormons are telling each other, oh, isn't that so beautiful? Isn't it so wonderful? What a wonderful spiritual experience. But yet, if you go to the ex-Mormon subreddit on Reddit, there is a sub called ex-Mormon, ex-Mormon, M-O-R-M-O-N. It has almost 60,000 members of this subreddit. In fact, it is the largest subreddit of any group of former members of a faith on the internet, as well on subreddit at least, or I should say on Reddit. And if you ask virtually any one of these 60,000 people in the ex-Mormon subreddit to share with you what their real thoughts were the very first time they went to the temple, I'd be willing to bet you that 95% of them would say that it was alarming,
disturbing, and violent. And
I remember when I first took my wife to the temple. I know we got divorced years later, but this is a woman that was the mother of my children. When I first took her through the temple for her first experience, I was 21. She was 20. We went through the whole thing, and we had the penalties back then, so she's pantomiming, slitting her throat, and chanting Pele Ale. We got into the celestial room, and it was just the two of us, and she said to me, I don't ever want to do that again. And she had like a fake smile on her face and was like kind of like saying it without actually mouthing the words, kind of like talking like a ventriloquist. You know, she didn't want to move her mouth. She didn't want anybody to read her lips from across the room and realize what she was saying. And I was taken back. I said, wait, what? And she said, again, without moving her lips, I don't ever want to do that again. And sure enough, she never did it again. That was in 1989. We didn't leave the church until 2002. And sure enough, she never did it again. I went through dozens of times during those years. But she never went through the endowment ceremony ever again because it was so traumatizing to her and so bizarre and so foreign to anything she'd ever experienced in the church. She just had no desire to repeat that. And I can't blame her.
I don't blame her either. She had the courage to say she wasn't going to do it, where most of us probably thought, okay, it's just, I just haven't done it enough. I'll catch on, but I never caught on to it. And I went a lot, but I could never relate it to anything that I'd learned at church. The other thing that bothered me is that even though the name of the church is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, you rarely heard anything about Jesus. It was just all about Joseph Smith and all about all the modern prophets. Okay, we're going to take a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. This product is superb. I have been taking it for about a year now, and I can feel my cardiovascular system run like a Swiss watch. I definitely recommend this product for anyone that has high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and heart palpitations, A+. It's potent, but it works. I have been waking up for the past 3 years with numb hands, and a week into using Extendivite, my numb hands seem to have cleared up. My circulation was off, and now it's back on track. So I'm happy. I feel so energized, and I have my husband on it now. My mother-in-law has cholesterol problems, so I bought her a bottle as well. Thank you so much. Love the product. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest is Mike Norton. And Mike, you were talking about the temple. Now, not just anyone can go into the temple. Tell us what they have to do, and if they don't do it, they are not, even parents, if they are not, if they don't pay tithing, they can't attend their child's wedding. So tell us some of the things that you helped people to do to be able to go into the temple. This is fun.
Well, on this subject, I'm sure a lot of your listeners might be familiar with the series on A&E that Leah Remini is doing about Scientology.
Oh, yes.
And on a recent episode, Mike Rinder, a guy that was a high-ranking Scientologist who's now a former Scientologist, he made some comment that when I heard it, I can't remember exactly how he said it, but he said something to the effect of that Scientology is the only religion that requires its members to pay in advance for services that they'll receive in the future. And when he said this, and I horribly paraphrased that, but when he said it, I remember thinking to myself, well, clearly Mr. Rinder is not familiar with Mormonism.
Exactly.
In Mormonism, in order to go to the temple, now they have churches all over the place. And in Utah, they're on every other corner. There's tens of thousands of Mormon chapels around the world, and those are places where they go to church on Sunday and participate in their services on Sundays. And anybody is welcome. They have signs outside that say visitors welcome. But the temples, there's about 150 Mormon temples spread around the world. The most famous one is the classic historical Salt Lake City Temple in on Temple Square in downtown Salt Lake City that was built in the 1800s. And a lot of these temples, most of them, have a gold statue on top of an angel blowing a trumpet. And that's supposed to be the angel Moroni. The angel Moroni is the guy, the angel that supposedly told Joseph Smith where the gold plates are buried that he translated into the Book of Mormon. But in order to attend the temple, you have to pay a full tithe. You have to be a member in good standing. And in order to be a member in good standing, several of the requirements are you have to obey the word of wisdom. You can't drink alcohol. You can't drink coffee or tea. You can't smoke cigarettes or chew tobacco. You have to obey the law of chastity, which means you can't be having sexual relations with somebody who is not your legally and lawfully wedded spouse. And I should emphasize that spouse needs to be a member of the opposite sex. You cannot be in a same-sex relationship, even if you're legally married, and be considered to be worthy to attend the temple. You also must give 10%. You must be a full tithe payer, which means you have to give at least 10% of your income to the church for at least 1 year in order to be worthy enough to attend the temple. Typically, in most cases, people go through the temple endowment ceremony where they learn the secret handshakes and passwords that Mormons believe are necessary to enter the kingdom of God, which Joseph Smith, by the way, he kind of stole these handshakes from Freemasonry when he became a Mason, and literally within weeks of becoming a Freemason, I believe it was a 32nd or 33rd degree Mason, he then created this temple endowment ceremony. And it's really just kind of a bastardized version of the Masonic temple ceremony combined with a retelling of the creation story and of Adam and Eve and Adam and Eve being tempted by Satan and being cast out of the garden and all that. But during the ceremony, throughout the ceremony, you learn special handshakes and passwords that they believe you'll need to know to get into heaven. And when a Mormon gets married in the temple, every single person in attendance at their wedding must be a faithful, tithe-paying member of the church who has already been through the temple ceremony, and essentially everybody in the room is wearing the same special underwear. Because once you go through the temple your first time, that's when you receive, your very first time is when you start wearing the special underwear that they believe are required to wear for the rest of your life if you want to be a member in good standing. And coincidentally, the special underwear that they believe will protect you from the power of the destroyer, a.k.a. Satan, these underwear can only be purchased from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So isn't that something that you have to wear special underwear in order to go to heaven, or the celestial kingdom, as they call it, but you can only wear these, you can only buy these special underwear from the church itself. And it costs about twice as much as regular underwear. Like if you were to buy a six-pack of Hanes or Fruit of the Loom at Walmart, you'd pay about twice as much for your special underwear from the church as you would for regular underwear. A marriage ceremony, a Mormon temple marriage ceremony, is actually relatively short. The actual ceremony itself only takes about 2.5 minutes. In most cases, when a couple is getting married, they will get anywhere from a 10 to 20 minute pep talk, lecture, call it what you want, from the officiator. The person who is officiating, who is usually a complete stranger to the couple, will give some words of advice, and those words of advice pretty much always include, make sure you pay your tithing and make sure that you're always worthy to go to the temple. So in other words, pay your tithing and continue paying your tithing for the rest of your life. Then they have the ceremony where it takes about 2.5 minutes. The husband, the wife gives herself to the husband, but the husband does not give himself to his wife. The word love is never mentioned in the actual ceremony itself. And the bride and groom are kneeling at an altar facing each other, but they're not facing each other. During the ceremony, they're required to look at the officiator. And they're holding hands in what is known as the second token of the Melchizedek priesthood, the patriarchal grip or sure sign of the nail, during the ceremony. So they're holding hands. They're wearing these outfits that look absolutely ridiculous. They both have on like a big thing. It kind of looks like a toga. And then they've got a bright green apron around their waist. Both the bride and groom do. They've got this big 6-foot-long sash tied around their waist. And the groom is wearing a hat that kind of looks like a baker's hat of sorts, but it's tied to his shoulder with a string. And the bride is wearing a really ugly
veil
that it looks like she paid, you know, it looks like a $3 veil. It's just, and most Mormon brides are not able to wear the dress. Like if you attend a Mormon wedding reception, receptions are not held inside the temple. So if you attend a Mormon reception, you might actually see bridesmaids and you'll see groomsmen and you'll see this beautiful dress that the bride is wearing. In about 95% of the cases, the dress that you see the Mormon bride wearing at her reception is not the dress she was wearing when she got married, because they're not allowed to wear really fancy wedding gowns or wedding gowns that aren't modest enough. And so most Mormon brides will actually have two separate wedding dresses. They'll have the cheap, ugly one that they get married in, and then they'll have the nice, beautiful one that they wear for their reception. In many cases, the bride's maids at a Mormon wedding reception and the groomsmen, in many cases, didn't actually attend the wedding itself because they weren't worthy. They're either not members of the church, or they drink coffee, or they're too young, or whatever the case may be. It is not uncommon to attend a Mormon wedding reception and have several of the people, the party, you know, the wedding party, the bridesmaids or groomsmen, be people that didn't actually even attend the wedding itself because they weren't worthy to do so. So starting back in 2002, I have helped hundreds of so-called unworthy Mormons attend the wedding of a loved one, usually one of their children. And it's just kind of an underground black market kind of thing for temple recommends. I don't charge a fee for it. In fact, I've actually had people offer. The very first one was a gentleman back in 2002 contacted me and through a mutual friend, he said, I understand you might be able to help my wife and I acquire some recommends. We want to attend the temple wedding of our son. And I told him I could. He said our bishop wants us to catch up on our tithing. If we catch up on our tithing, then he'll give us temple recommends. But he refused to pay tithing and to catch up because he said that, well, this is back in 2002, he knew apparently how much the church leaders get paid, and he felt like it was abuse of funds. He refused to participate and actually give thousands of dollars to the church. So he was looking for an alternative option to acquire a temple recommend to go to the temple so he could see his son get married. I asked him, just out of curiosity, how much did you give it? Did the bishop give you a dollar figure and tell you, you pay this much and you'll be considered caught up? Yes, he did. It was $22,000.
Wow.
Now, I jokingly said, oh, man, I can do it for five. And he said... He said, well, you make a check.
Oh, my goodness.
And so there was a little confusion there because I said, no, I was totally joking about that. And he got mad. He's like, wait a second, so you're not going to be able to help me? And I said, no, I can help you. I just won't take your money for it. If I took your money for this, it would make me no better than them. So I'll get you and your wife temple recommends, but I'm not going to take your money for it. I had one person send me a Starbucks gift card for helping him out, but I had another person. I had one person send me a $100 bill one time when they sent the recommend back after using it. They sent it back with $100 and said, "Here, go buy yourself something." Whatever. If they want to give a gift, that's fine. But I don't ask for compensation for helping them out. I just think that'd be wrong. You shouldn't charge somebody money for the privilege of attending their own child's wedding. And I think it's just wrong. It's ironic that Mormonism likes to say families are forever. Well, yeah, but families also want to see their own kid get married and not have to pay an extortion fee of 10% of their income for the privilege of doing so. And it's sad, too, if you have some bride and she's 20 years old and she's getting married, her 16 or 17-year-old sister can't attend the wedding because she hasn't been to the temple yet and she doesn't wear the right underwear yet. And so because her younger siblings haven't been to the temple, they can't attend the wedding of their own older sister. It's just ridiculous. And it's sad.
It is. It's very, very sad.
I refer to Mormonism as a family-dividing, wallet-draining, soul-sucking cult. It's like Scientology light. In that, the only difference between Mormonism and Scientology, honestly, it's 150 years. You give Scientology about 140, 150 years, and Scientology will, in my opinion, be much more, they'll be less aggressive, and I think they're gonna fit into society norms better, but the damage has been done. Leah Remini has done such a phenomenal job of exposing the nonsense that is Scientology that it's got to be absolutely devastating on their conversion efforts and on their convert retention efforts.
Well,
I think what I do is very damaging.
I think what I was just going to say that what you have done and what you do has been phenomenal. You have helped you have saved people's lives. Tell us about Steve.
Steven. It was several years ago. I had a young man that called me on the phone and he said, is this Mike Norton? I post my phone number online all the time. Anybody wants to call or text or whatever, my phone number, it's 801-971-8661. I want these kids or potential converts in Mormonism, when they see my videos on YouTube, I want them to be able to get a hold of me, and because a lot of times they're angry and they think that I'm lying, that I made them up, that they're all fake. Like I'm the Bruce Wayne of ex-Mormons. Apparently they think that I'm a billionaire and I have money to burn and I am building massive full-scale replicas of Mormon temples in my basement and hiring it's just ridiculous. So I want them to be able to get a hold of me and talk so that I can walk them through a very simple process to prove beyond any reasonable doubt that my videos are far from fake. They're very legitimate. So a few years ago, I got a phone call from a kid named Steven, and he said, "I just wanted to tell you, thank you. You saved my life today." And I said, "Well, how so?" I mean, he definitely had my attention. Steven was gay. He'd known he was gay since he was about, I don't know, I think he said 10 or 11 years old. Maybe younger than that. The only people who really knew was him, his mom, and his dad. And his parents were divorced, and his mom was very, very Mormon, as was Steven. And when Steven was 11 years old, right before he turned 12 years old, he had an interview with his bishop to become a deacon, to receive the priesthood at the age of 12, which is very customary. And he went in for this interview with a bishop, a worthiness interview, where the bishop would ask him, if he lives the word of wisdom, if he pays tithing and obeys the law of chastity and all that. When he got to the law of chastity, before he got the law of chastity, Stephen told me that the very first thing the bishop said to him when he sat down was, "So your mother tells me you think you're gay." And he was blindsided by this. He had no idea that his mother had outed him to his bishop. He told me later, "If I had a gun, I would have killed myself on the spot." He was mortified. And so what he thought was going to be a 10-minute worthiness interview turned into a 45-minute grilling by the bishop about homosexuality and how, you know, surely Stephen, had some fantasies or touch boys or kiss boys or whatever, and he wanted to know the details. And he was trying to convince Stephen, essentially, you're not gay. You just think you are. This is a phase you're going through, whatever. So Stephen was mortified. But he made it through it. And 2 years later, right before he turned 14 years old, so now he's 13, almost 14, he has another worthiness interview to become a teacher. He's advancing in the priesthood. And he said, if I thought my interview to be a deacon was bad, I had no idea how bad it could get. So he goes into this interview two years later, right before his 14th birthday, with the same bishop.
Oh, dear. Okay, we'll pick this up on the other side. We'll be right back.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Okay, nurse, let's get this man to the ER stat.
Right away, doctor.
We see this every day. Heart attack or angina pain due to blocked and clogged arteries. Chelation can remove obstructions or blockages from arteries and help avoid painful and expensive surgery. Now there's Angioprim. It's a liquid oral chelation product that you take with juice. You start to feel the results fast. Angioprim increases blood flow all over the body, and that means more energy and strength to take on the day with less aches and pains. 60 years of research has gone into chelation, and Angioprim is the result. A safe and easy way to unblock your veins and arteries from buildup that slow circulation.
Paging Dr. Jones, please report to the emergency room right away.
Log on now for a special radio offer from Angioprim. That's angioprim.com/radio. A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M. Angioprim.com/radio or call 877-882-7221. That's 877-882-7221.
All righty, so Stephen was just about to go into this interview to progress in the priesthood with the very, very same bishop.
He's the same bishop. He's almost 14 years old, and he told me that if he thought his interview at the age of 11, right before he turned 12, was bad, he had no idea. Now he's gone through puberty, and the bishop, for 45 minutes to an hour, essentially grilled him about his homosexuality again and asked him if, you know, he if he lives the law of chastity, and Stephen said yes, and he said, explain to me what you think the law of chastity is, Stephen. And this circular conversation where Stephen had to explain what the law of chastity meant, and you know, it's you can't masturbate, obviously. You're not allowed to do anything sexual with anybody who you're not legally married to, and certainly not same sex stuff, as Stephen, as the bishop assumed Stephen was doing now. He told me, no, he said, I wasn't even 14 years old yet. He said, at that point, I'd never kissed a boy before, never done anything with a boy, but the bishop wasn't having any of it. He was convinced that I was lying to him and kept going, Stephen. And he decided at the age of 14, he's never going to do that again. Absolutely, positively, never do it again. So a year goes by, he's 15, a few months goes by. He realizes in about 9 months, he's going to be 16 years old, and he devised what he was convinced was a perfect plan to get out of ever having an interview like this again with a bishop. He'd just kill himself. So for 9 months, Stephen planned his suicide. He was stealing Ambien from his mother. Apparently she had Ambien, and he would just take one or two here and there. And after 9 months, he had a pretty hefty pile of Ambien stacked up, and he was going to come home from school early one Friday, take all of his Ambien, barricade himself in his bedroom, lock the door, and he figured his mom wouldn't come home until about, 6 o'clock. She'd make dinner. By the time she called him down for dinner, he'll have been asleep from a giant stack of Ambien for probably hours and hours. He was assuming he would be dead. And right before he actually took the pills and laid down to go to sleep and never wake up, he took one last valiant effort to search for something online that one of the church leaders had said. He wanted to find a talk by a Mormon church leader that was made for somebody like his mother, that he could show him and say, look, you know, brother so-and-so or elder so-and-so says that if your child's gay, you should just love them the way they are, and so on and so forth. He didn't find that talk. In fact, he found a lot of talks that were quite the opposite, things that would probably encourage somebody like his mother. Instead, he found YouTube channel New Name Noah, and he found one of my temple videos, and he's watching it, and he said, I just started laughing. When he realized, he asked me at one point, did you have any bullies growing up? And I said, yeah, sure, in junior high school, there's always bullies. And he said, well, my bullies were my mother and my bishop, and I was done being bullied. But when he saw this video and members, you know, they're wearing these ridiculous costumes and chanting, he knew it wasn't true. He just knew it. He changed his plans. He decided he wanted to live. He wasn't going to kill himself.
Do you want to stay over and finish the story on the other side of 3 minutes?
Absolutely.
Okay. We'll be right back in 3 minutes.
A lot. If you're forgetful, nervous, moody, or overwhelmed, chances are you're not protecting yourself from the ravaging effects of stress and anxiety. No matter the cause, ongoing stress and elevated levels of the stress hormone cortisol can rob your memory, your health, your quality of life, and your future. Now you can combat the effects of stress and anxiety while improving your memory and recall at the same time with the dietary supplement Calm and Clever. Studies show that the ingredients in Calm and Clever reduce cortisol by as much as 30% in as little as 1 to 2 weeks and increase your ability to recall facts, names, and numbers in 4 to 12 weeks. Calm and Clever was created by scientist Kurt Hendricks, a principal investigator in two NIH-funded studies on Alzheimer's disease.
Calm and Clever for 2 months. You'll feel the difference. Call 1-800-758-8746 or go to calmandclever.com.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.